and we may have some people joining us as we move along. But thank you. So, all right. Well, welcome to the third edition of the DMSE Masterclass. This is a monthly class for current DMSE students, faculty, and those interested in the Doctor of Medical Science program at the Arizona School of Health Sciences, A.T. Still University. This gives us the opportunity to hear from inspiring masters in the PA profession and or those in healthcare who have made a difference. So a few housekeeping issues to our attendees. Please keep your microphones on mute. If you have any comments during the presentation, please make them in the chat session. Once we're finished, we'll open up to questions and you can unmute yourself. And Dr. Beth Popray, our administrative manager of the DMSE program, will be monitoring the chat for any questions or comments. So let's get to it. So let me take a minute to introduce our guest today, Richard Muma, PhD, MPH, PAC. Rick became the first PA to be named president of the university when the Kansas Board of Regents announced his appointment as president of Wichita State University in 2021. If you don't know this, Wichita State University is a Division I research university located in Wichita, Kansas. By the way, my brother always used to pronounce it as Wichita, but I had to correct him. Dr. Muma has held a number of positions at WSU since he joined the faculty of the PA program back in 1994. He was director of their PA program from 2002 to 2008, when he began to rise through the ranks of university administration, first as chair of the Department of Public Health Sciences, then moving to the provost's office as assistant provost, and then provost in 2018. He's been a prolific researcher, contributing many articles to the Journal of Physician Assistant Education and other journals over his career, and editing 4 books on HIV infection and patient education. He earned his PhD in 2004 from the University of St. Louis, Missouri. Dr. Muma was drawn to education early in his career, becoming associate faculty just a year after his graduation from the University of Texas Medical Branch and Galveston PA program in 1987. This was at the height of the HIV epidemic, and Rick, then working in infectious diseases, was invited to help develop HIV curriculum for an HRSA grant. And in 1994, he joined the faculty at WSU, where he has remained ever since, with the exception of a 2-year stint as director of the St. Louis University PA program in 1999 to 2000. So welcome, Rick. You have more than 30 years of experience as a professor, administrator, and physician assistant in internal medicine and infectious diseases. So first of all, let's go back a while and tell us a little bit about your introduction to the PA profession, why you became a PA, and some of your early clinical and professional experiences, if you wouldn't mind.
Yeah, so thank you, Randy, and thank you for that introduction. That's great. I really appreciate it. Randy didn't say, but we both came to Wichita State at the exact same time in 1994. Randy, you were there for about a year, and then you went back to Arizona. And so we have that connection to Kansas and have stayed in touch ever since then. So how I got into the PA profession. So I'm sure it's similar kind of stories that you all have, but mine goes back to when I was in middle school. One of my choir teacher came in class one day and said that he was just want to let everybody know that at the end of the school year, he was going to go to PA school at Baylor and get out of teaching. This is down in Houston where I grew up. And that just kind of stuck with me. I continued to read about it. My sister was also intrigued by that profession and, just started working towards my prerequisites when I got to college and, applied just to one program, didn't get in. I was a alternate in those days, but usually nowadays there's lots of opportunities when you're on an alternate list to move up that list. And that's what happened to me then. And I became a PA in 1985 and thrown right in the very beginning of the HIV epidemic. And Houston and Galveston were sort of an epicenter of that disease at the time, and just thrown on the wards full of patients with HIV. Didn't really know that much about it at the time, and that's kind of where I started. My first job as a PA after I graduated from the University of Texas Medical Branch was a position in oncology. And that's kind of how I got into infectious diseases. A lot of the patients that we were seeing at the time had manifestations of HIV, you know, Kaposi's, sarcoma, lymphomas, and developed that expertise then. And then the PA program actually wrote a HRSA grant to start a HIV AIDS education program for students in the PA program, but also in medical school. And there wasn't anybody else working in that field other than the physician I was working with in infectious diseases and in oncology. And they hired me to do that. And I still continue to see patients all along the way. And then this is the story of my life. Everything happens this way. I never have any intentions of being anything. Really, the only thing I've ever intended to be was a PA. But just one thing happens and doors open up and I get into other positions. One of the faculty members of the PA program in Galveston left. And so they asked me to apply for the job. And of course, in those days, no one was applying for jobs like that. And I got a job as a faculty member and just continued in the PA program after that grant ran out and really developed a lot of expertise in managing HIV patients in the early years of my career, presented a lot at PA conferences on the topic, wrote a couple of books on HIV. I have to tell you, just Saturday, I was back in Galveston. I was asked to do the commencement address for the PA class that graduated on Saturday down there, 35 years after I graduated, in the same hall. And they also gave me an outstanding alumnus award. It was very nice. in any case, lots of fond memories about my time down in Galveston. I was able to reconnect with a lot of my old colleagues down there. I don't know why I'm telling you that. I lost track of why I switched over that to that particular topic. But in any case, that's where I started. I don't know if that answers your question. Probably too much information, Randy.
No, that's perfect. We could probably spend a whole hour on that first part of your entry into the PA world. The next question I have is, in your early years in education, you were really active in reshaping health professions education, particularly at Wichita State. Now, you mentioned, thank you for saying that you and I worked together for a short period at Wichita State PA program. And I know you went on to the development of undergraduate degrees for paramedics and health science majors and enhancing the master's degree in PA studies and recognizing the Department of Public Health Sciences to include undergraduate degrees in health management and health sciences and a graduate degree in aging studies. So sort of that's the next a decade, if you will, of your experience. Share with us what was most exciting for you in those days, the pre-provost, pre-president days.
Yeah, so you mentioned a lot of things that I was involved in. You know, I don't know about you all, but what energizes me the most is developing new programs, developing new ways to reach students, you know, innovative ways to teach students in the classroom, outside of classroom. And, you know, those early days that I was in Galveston and also at Wichita State were some of the best days of my life. I remember this is what I was going to tell you. I forgot. When I was down in Galveston, someone asked me, so what is it that really energized you? And it's just these kinds of things. And I remember in the early days of my profession, I couldn't wait to get to work, and I would hardly, you have to pull me out of the classroom, out of the clinic, because it was so exciting with all the new things I was learning around HIV, and just really felt like I was making an impact. And that also translates just to being PA education, because as you know, I got into it when the profession was just 20 years old, no one really knew a lot about PAs. I really have always felt that I've been able to provide a real impact into health profession education in general, but PA education specifically, because, you know, there just wasn't a lot of knowledge among the general population about the profession. I had always had the opportunity to move on and move into different positions. Richard Greer, who was the chair of the PA department at Galveston, who is my mentor when I went to school there, and then after I graduated and worked in the department, you know, he passed away a couple of years ago. He always told me, when the door opens, walk through it, see what's on the other side of it. You can always walk back if it doesn't work out. And I just always kind of live my life that way. And so at Wichita State, there's always been opportunities for me to do other things in the College of Health Professions up here. At the time, in that time frame that Randy was mentioning of my involvement, the Department of Public Health, and I have a master's in public health too, was going through a lot of personnel changes, and they really need someone to step in and kind of shape that department up. So I did that. And I was also the chair of the PA department. I did that for about 5 years, and it was just really difficult to do both jobs. And so eventually I convinced the dean at the time that, hey, I can't do both of these. It seems like you need more help right now on the public health side. Let me continue to do that. And then he hired another PA chair to run the PA program. So I've just been able to take advantage of those opportunities. And I think I hear stories about PAs all the time, faculty, that's kind of really what a lot of people have the opportunity to do as they move through their profession. And it just really made things very exciting always.
Well, that's excellent. So before assuming the presidency, you were the executive vice president and provost at Wichita State, serving as the university's chief academic officer and providing academic leadership for the university's priorities, including enrollment, applied learning, funded research, and regional economic development, to just say a few. Share with us share with us your experience about moving up the ranks of higher education leadership. I mean, we're seeing more and more of this now. I see a lot of our colleagues moving into deans and vice president roles and things like that. But you know, it takes, and you said it earlier, it takes some sort of passion, you know, to make that happen, and frankly, to put up with the machinations of what goes on at universities to get things done. I mean, yeah. You know, as a dean for many years, you know, I think there were probably 14 to 15 things that went on in any given day for any given issue, whether it was student issues, faculty issues, mm-hmm. external issues, and so share with us your experience about moving up, you know, and wanting to move to that presidency role.
Yeah. Well, the key word there, Randy, is wanting. I, in my speech or my commencement address on Saturday, you know, I really had no inkling or really ambition to ever be a president of the university or a provost. And I'll tell you why, but it'll make more sense here when I explain this to you. So, you know, I told you I was a chair of those two departments. And one of the things that PA education really, working in PA education really taught me is assessment, accreditation, outcomes, just being very oriented around those particular issues. And that was further reinforced in public health, because, you know, they have accreditation as well. And, you know, public health practitioners or program evaluators are looking at, you know, effectiveness of different programs. That's just what they do. And so I, over time, developed that expertise. And during that time, there was people who were at senior level positions at the university who were retiring and moving on. And they needed someone who could come and look at doing this for the university around accreditation, assessment, curriculum, those sorts of things. And so Actually, I was really happy what I was doing in public health, and I wasn't going to apply for the position, but they called me up in the provost's office and said, "Hey, Rick, we heard that you might this might be a fit for you." So I applied for the job and got it. And the next thing I know, I was associate vice president in the provost's office, and I did that from about 2011 until 2018 when I became the provost, and really developed a very deep understanding of university administration. Not only around accreditation, assessment, and curriculum, but you know, faculty governance, shared governance, just the enrollment, just the inner workings. Led strategic enrollment management for the university for a number of years. You know, kind of grew up in that office, developing this expertise. And one of my boss, the provost, he was removed from the position, and the president at the time. He appointed me as the interim provost. Again, not thinking that I was going to be the permanent provost, but he encouraged me to apply for the job, and I got that job. So that was like in May of 2018, or January is when I became the interim, but May of 2018, I became the permanent provost. And the president who appointed me in that job got ill, severely ill. He had pulmonary sarcoidosis. It was diagnosed 30 years prior to that, but he developed all kinds of pulmonary issues with that disease, as you can imagine. And I never forget, it was the Tuesday before Thanksgiving 2018. His assistant called me and said that he'd been admitted with a pneumothorax. And I knew then that he wouldn't be back ever on campus. And I became the interim president and provost at the same time for about 6 months. Any case, he passed away, and they brought in an interim president and then searched for a permanent president. And that particular president only lasted 9 months. And I got another call, this time from the Board of Regents. Never forget that date either, September 25th, 2020, or 2019, no, 2020, asking me to be the interim president again. And then I was interim president for another 6, 7, 8 months. And at that point, I'd been doing all this central administration and the provost work, and I thought, you know what, I'm not going to train another president. So I decided to put my hat in the ring. It's much more complicated than I'm telling you, but I decided to go ahead and apply for the job, and I was successful in getting the job permanently, and I was named that in that role May of 2021. It's been great. But again, if you get the pattern, I have just have been doing my job, trying to do the best job I could. And I've just kind of moved into one thing after another. And so, like I said before, I never woke up one day and said, "Hey, I think I want to be a university president. I'm going to work towards that." It didn't happen that way. And just from a lot of my colleagues, presidential colleagues across the country, it happens more like that than the very staged, calculated way of becoming a president. Seems to have been work for me. I just have to tell you a little funny story. It's always kind of been this way my whole life. When I was a kid, my first job was a busboy at Denny's in Houston. And I knew I didn't want to do that forever. I did that for about 9 months. And then my sister's boyfriend worked at a grocery store, and she worked at a grocery store. So, well, that might be interesting. I was 16 years old. And so I was walking into the grocery store to apply. And as I was walking out, the manager is escorting one of my good friends out of the store, is firing him because he wasn't doing his job, and asked me, "What are you doing here?" I said, "Well, I was just here, thought I'd apply for a job here as a sacker." He goes, "Can you start right now?" So it's the story of my life, how things have happened. But I've been very fortunate and blessed along the way. I've learned so much. And as I said to the PA graduates on Saturday down at UT Galveston, it really all started in around my curiosity and my problem, developing problem solving skills as PAs and looking at things in outcomes sort of an approach, and particularly my public health background that really set me up to be where I am today.
Well, that's great. A long way from Denny's. That's great. Rick, many of our DMSC students are either in PA education or are aspiring educators. We have a track in our program for them. And you brought this up earlier, and I think it's an important concept. Share with us your experience as a senior educator, and in particular, what does shared governance mean to you, and how do you feel about that?
Well, I mean, it's a really important concept to be able to get your arms wrapped around in a higher education setting. Take this very serious. I mean, actually, if you look at all the regional accrediting bodies that credit all of our institutions, there's a whole section on shared governance and the expectation for that. You know, it all stems back to academic freedom and all those issues around academic freedom, where the faculty who are providing the product, basically, because of that right and the different AAUPs governing documents that came out in the early 1900s, guarantees faculty the right to weigh in on different issues. Now, it doesn't mean shared decision making always. In some cases, in the curriculum, yes, faculty own the curriculum. But it, at least under my leadership as provost, particularly at that level, but also associate vice president, it's very important if you're want to make sure that you move the university forward in a unified fashion. More and more you see faculty who are disgruntled about how institutions are moving forward. They believe that we're losing our luster. They believe that, we're not focusing on, the general education, liberal arts, and the core of what folks believe is the foundation of a higher education degree. And so I deploy several different things at the institution. I meet with our faculty senate president, our staff senate president, and our student senate president every 2 weeks on a one-on-one basis. And then as a group, once a month, we meet and discuss things that the Board of Regents are dealing with and things that we may put on the agenda at our Board of Regents meetings, and just really keep them involved. I have all of their cell phones if an issue comes up. And that's the thing about higher education these days. It can change on a dime overnight with social media. I mean, things can flare up at any particular time. And I always have them on the phone, letting them know if there's an issue that they're going to hear about, or it's going to be written in the student newspaper or in their local newspaper. I want to make sure that I have an opportunity to talk with them about whatever that issue is. I'm also very clear that, we're going to disagree on things, and that's okay. And you can be passionately disagreeable about an issue, but we can still work together and still move the priorities of the institution. And I remind them always that I'm going to be making decisions on what's best for the institution as a whole. My responsibility, my fiduciary responsibility as president is, prominently displayed in everything I do and talk about, and just be really clear on what we're doing as an institution and involve them on helping shape those priorities or whatever you're talking about. When I was provost, and our current provost does this as well, I went to every faculty senate meeting and went to as many staff senate meetings as I could. Went and spoke to those groups on a regular basis, keeping them up to date. It really takes a lot of effort to keep people involved, but you're much better off doing that than the opposite, which will just cause a lot of disgruntled faculty and staff behavior, what I call organized procrastination, when they don't feel like they're engaged fully as a not necessarily in equal, and you know, they understand that there's administrators and they have to do their job, but they do want to be at the table. And I think it's important if you're going to be effective in moving the institution's priorities forward.
Yeah, well said. After spending about a decade, or actually 15 years in administration as a chair and a dean, I stepped down a few years ago back into a faculty role. And my wife says to me, "What are you thinking?" But anyway, 2 weeks ago, I was appointed the new chair of our faculty senate. So I've gone from the dark side to the light, to the light side. You know, but the important thing, and we're a fairly new university, as you know, we changed in 2010, or actually right around 2000, we went from a college to a university, and so we had to universitize the whole university. And so over the last decade, the faculty has been extremely important to the president. And to his credit, you know, I meet with him monthly, and the provost, our senior vice president, meets with us on a monthly basis. So I think it's a huge important thing in terms of transparency and communication.
Yeah.
So I think that's a great thing. Well, Rick, I'm going to start wrapping up here, but what would be your advice to our DMSC students? In our program, they're all PAs, and they graduate after 2 or 3 years in our DMSC program and move either into leadership, education, clinical roles. But now that you're where you're at, what's your advice to them, particularly about the future of the PA profession, and maybe in particular PA education?
Well, you know, I was fortunate to be down in Galveston to kind of re-witness the success of the PA program at UT. You know, it's one of the first PA programs in the country, and they graduate 90 students a year. I don't know how many students are at ATSU's PA program. That seems like a lot of students.
Yeah.
I've always thought this, but particularly now I see a really, really bright future of the profession. I mean, I don't know how anybody couldn't see that. I know there's still some issues around autonomy and now the name change, but it's just a great profession. I don't regret a moment of being in it, and it's afforded me where I am, you know, all the opportunities I've had today and where I am today. You know, my kind of viewpoint of PA education right now is a little bit more distant. You know, we do have a PA program, obviously, here at Wichita State. Accreditation's been a struggle, and I'm sure you all are familiar with some of those issues. A lot of PA programs have been on probation, including Wichita State's, and I recently just got off that. I can't tell you how difficult that was for me as a university president to see my discipline on probation. But, you know, we all kind of gathered our thoughts and worked together to get off. And Galveston was even on probation at one time. There's a lot of programs that you would not expect that to be the case. And I know that's the struggles around the growth of the profession, accountability, and making sure that the education is delivered as it has been intended to be delivered. But those are things that can be worked out. Just in general, you know, I really would encourage you to think about administrative roles beyond PA education, although that's probably not a popular thing to say because there's such shortages of solid PA administrators in a lot of cases. But the kind of skill and the expertise that PAs and PA educators have would be really useful to other higher level positions at universities. You know, talk about this a lot, but and I said this to the students the other day, I've traded patients for students, and there's a lot of similarities in that. We're looking at the same kind of outcomes. We want students to graduate. Matter of fact, the analytic tools that we use to measure student success is developed by a company that did that for hospital outcomes. advisory board, which and then we use the tool that they developed for higher education. And it's looking at all of our data, incoming data, data that's generated from a student being in the program, and predicting whether they're going to be successful or not, and redirecting those students if they're not. So a lot of similarities, a lot of things that folks learned in healthcare translate well into upper administration types of roles. And then the other thing that I think is so important is that, you know, as PAs, we're taught to be calm, cool, collected, thoughtful, analytic about how we approach our patients and the good days and the difficult days. And there's not a lot of people in higher education administrative roles that do that very well. And I'm not saying I'm perfect at this, but the having a little bit of perspective that we all have learned as PAs and PA educators is very useful in a very pragmatic way of managing at the senior level administrative positions at universities.
Excellent. Well, I'm going to sort of move into our question period. But since I have the floor, I'm going to start with the first one. So, Rick, with your busy schedule, what do you do for fun?
Well, let me tell you what I do to just kind of make sure that I don't like kind of go off the deep end. My spouse and I get up at 4:30 every morning. And we go on we do some sort of exercise, usually when it's, you know, normal temperatures or reasonable temperatures. We run outside and every morning, or go to the gym if that's not the case. But we do that every day, every single day of the week. That does mean that I go to sleep. So, you know, I'll be a little sleepy here about 7 o'clock my time. I do go to bed a little bit early, but the flip side of that, if I don't do that in the morning, I just won't get it done because I'm doing things like this or having meetings or dinners or whatever. So that's very important for me. You know, we do a lot of gardening. We have a community garden that we started in our community. You know, just like to do exercise and ride bikes and that sort of thing. So we don't have a lot of other hobbies or, you know, traditional kind of hobbies. Do some traveling. But yeah, that's basically it.
All right. Well, very good. I'm going to open it up. We've had a bunch of other folks join us. And either put a question in the chat box or, you know, unmute yourself, and love to have you ask some questions of Rick. So the floor is open. Come on, you educators, I know you're usually not shy about asking questions.
All right, I'll ask a question. So, having been chair for the last 3 years, you know, skill set aside, one of the things they didn't inform me was that I need to be a firefighter, because it always seems that you think you've planned your day out and stuff just jumps in front. And so as I look up above me to the deans and provosts, they're taking on more, I just have to deal with the department, than the dean's got the whole school. And then the provost has, you know, the whole university. So how do you set boundaries so that your day is not consumed with just answering emails and putting out fires?
Yeah. It's Michelle, it's really difficult. You know, I'm assuming you're talking about personnel issues, but probably student issues as well. I really try to push that down to the individuals who are closest to the issue. And so, and I don't know if this works in your department, but you have an academic coordinator, clinical coordinator, people like that who probably are or should be equipped to manage these kinds of issues. You know, some of them, there's no way that around it. You have to deal with it. But I, I really try to do that. And one of the things I try to do, and it's hard because I always, when people are emailing me, I want to make sure I respond. I feel like I'm being responsive. And we have kind of a rule in the office that we get back to someone within 24 hours, you know, unless it's an emergency. But sometimes there's value in not answering an email to see if they can figure it out themselves. And then, you know, and a lot of times the next day it's figured out and you don't have to deal with it. But I'm not perfect at this. Trust me, I'm not. It's hard. I try to make sure that I go through all my emails before I leave for the day, because there'll just be another 100 or 200 emails the next day and I just snowball. But I think surrounding yourself with someone who can, who's empowered by you to be able to make some of these decisions. You know, at my level, I have a chief of staff, and so I've empowered that individual to do that. And of course, all of the vice presidents are in charge of different aspects of the university, and I hire them to handle that. Because, you know, if I have to do it, why would I need them? I know that's harder in smaller departments to do, but I think it's doable if you feel comfortable empowering people to make those decisions and understand that sometimes they're going to make decisions that you don't really like. That's how we all learn when we're dealing with those kind of things.
Thanks.
All right. Other questions?
Well, I'll ask a question. Dr. Mumba, I'm curious because I know there's always dynamics around what the president's background is. And when you become president of an entire university, people kind of be like, oh, well, he's going to give more time towards his profession, whether that's your chemistry PhD or a PA in your case. Did you have any concerns or issues or obstacles to overcome with faculty or faculty senate because of your background, thinking you might favor the PA program over others?
Mm-hmm. My situation is a little bit different. I've been here for 26 years except that 2-year period I was at St. Louis University. And then prior to that, it was at the University of Texas Medical Branch, but that was, you know, 26 years ago. I went up through the ranks as the chair and then became the associate vice president, spent a lot of time in that role and really got to know a lot of people across campus. So I was, you know, working alongside with liberal arts folks, the sciences, engineering, business, fine arts, all of those individuals on things like program review. And so that there wasn't ever an issue about that. Now, when I first came to Wichita State, and Randy may remember this, there wasn't anybody on the faculty who was tenured. We were all on non-tenure track positions, and I was actually the first person to become tenured in that department. This is after Randy left, and then that kind of helped to get other folks on the tenure track and get them tenure, because we're a very traditional research university, and that whole process of doing that really kind of, I don't know if this is exactly what you're wondering about, but before that time, the PA department wasn't, I didn't feel like, very well respected across the university until we actually were seen as being successful in a more traditional kind of environment at the university. I came from UT Galveston, which is a health science center. And, you know, we were all just focused on health programs, but at a university like Wichita State, it's a comprehensive research school with all the different disciplines. And so I'm just telling you that in the early days, we did have to work towards that kind of acceptance. And then my role changed in working on behalf of the university actually helped that too. So I never try to play favoritism for any department. They all are valued departments on our program in our university. I am working on a major initiative at the university now that's focused around health sciences. And I think that some people may view that as I'm putting all the eggs in that basket, but I'm not. There's other things that we're working on. What we're working on is developing a health science center here in Wichita with the University of Kansas School of Medicine in Wichita, their School of Pharmacy, our College of Health Professions, and our WSU Tech affiliate and their health profession programs into one academic health science center in the core of our community. But that benefits the entire university and other disciplines besides the healthcare disciplines. And I've been able to explain it that way where people understand that this is going to be very beneficial for our institution.
I have a question in the chat from Lee Dawkins, one of our DMSC students. As I mentioned earlier, a lot of our students are clinical PAs who are at a place in their career where they want to move into education. His question is, he's getting ready to graduate in December with his DMSC, and he's been in clinical practice. You know, how do you recommend getting started in education? That's a huge question and something we talked about, obviously, back in the early 1990s.
Yeah. Well, my first thing I would say, I hope you're getting into it for the right reasons. Being committed as an educator and the principles of PA education is really important. It's difficult work. It's, many of you and I did back in the day, supervise students in the clinical setting. It's different from supervising students in a classroom setting and a program setting, where, really no professor in any discipline gets in a lot of cases. That's why these classes are so valuable. True education on how to manage students in the classroom and, do testing and evaluation and assessment and those sorts of things. Literally it's in my days for sure. It was see one, do one, teach one kind of a thing. And, so understanding that would be real important. I would venture to guess, just knowing the PA program here, that there is always opportunities for people to take a job as a faculty member in the PA profession. I think there's huge numbers of vacancies out there. But again, it really takes a really significant commitment to make that transformation from a clinician. Not that you have to lose that aspect of your identity. Actually, it's beneficial to you. But to make that transition, you really need to be committed to it if you want to do it well. Otherwise, I think there's a lot of frustrations that happen. People kind of come and go, which is not good for PA education, I don't think.
This is Lata. Oh, sorry, Dr. Gayson. No. Is it okay if I ask a question?
No, go for it. Yes.
Okay, thank you. Hi, Dr. Mumma. Nice to meet you. I'm sorry that I came in a little bit late. So I hope that this is not a repetitive question. Please tell me if it is, and I can get the answer from Dr. Danielson. That I'm a physician assistant certified in Canada and in the US. I did my training in the US and came back into the Canadian PA world back in 2009 when they launched the PA program in the civilian world here in Canada. I've been on faculty at the University of Toronto since then, and I run one of the courses, and I'm completing my doctorate degree within this fabulous program that I've absolutely loved. My question is, because I feel comparatively where the US is with respect to PA education and even just the profession is so far ahead of where we are in Canada. I feel like we're kind of back in maybe not quite at the beginning years, but maybe 20 years down the road in respect to the cooperation and relationship within our university. So we're under the Faculty of Medicine, Department of Family and Community Medicine. And I would like to know kind of your advice on how do we collaborate and kind of intertwine our programs a little bit more, because right now we feel like the step sister or the step brother of the program. And I really would like to figure out how we can kind of integrate a little bit more, maybe cooperate and share professor classes with each other, so that it's more of a collaborative educational environment, just like it is when we get out into the clinical world.
And so your program is associated with the Department of Family Medicine and Community Medicine, is that right?
At the University of Toronto.
And you're wondering about how more broadly you could fit into the university as a whole? Is that what you're...
Yes.
Well, you know, that's kind of the way PA education was in the early years of many of you probably remember that. You know, that's one of the reasons why we have accreditation standards that make it clear that PA program directors are in charge of the curriculum and their budget and their resources, and that there's certain expectations of the program that the university supports and integrates, and that sort of thing. That's taken a long time, and I think that we're there much more than we were in the past. So that's positive, and so I don't know where you are at your university, but that is one of the things that the senior level administrators need to be reminded of. And I forgive me for asking this question, but are the ARC PA standards utilized in Canada?
They are. We actually had, that's how we first got our accreditation for the program. It was through ARC PA, and now they've transitioned that to the Canadian Medical Association, same standard as the medical school's accreditation process.
Yeah, and maybe this isn't going to be a popular thing to say, but and this is something that I experienced when I came to Wichita State. You know, remember I was at a health science center. We were all very focused around the same kind of thing, patient care, you know, had hospitals and clinics and all that there. And then came to Wichita State and comprehensive university, health professions is just one of the things that we do here. And it's really important to, I think, if the aim is to, I'm not putting words in your mouth, have more respect and more people wanting you at the table to help make decisions, is for you to be involved in the culture of the university in the way they see their culture. You know, so it's important to know your environment and put yourself in that. And that was one of the things when I first came to Wichita State, no one was on tenure track. Therefore, no one had the ability to serve on committees across campus and really engage in governance of the university. So, and that was probably seen as okay from the ARC-PA standards at that time, but it's no longer seen that way. So it's both sides of the you know, administration and the program that need to come together to acculturate yourself to that environment. Otherwise, it's going to be you're over here, you know, marginalized, feeling marginalized. In the early days of PA programs, you know, a lot of programs, unfortunately, were in trailers at the edges of the campus or in a closet somewhere. Didn't control their resources. And I don't know, I'm hoping I'm not offending you at all.
It's the reality of it, right? I mean, we started from nothing. And so, you know, we're slowly growing. And I feel like our presence is definitely more well-known and more visible now than it has been in the past. And I appreciate what you're saying. It's like, because right now we don't have a tenure track. So I've been a status lecturer for 10 years. And every time I've tried to go to like promotions and faculty promotion meetings to figure out, they don't know where to put me. Yeah. And so they don't know where to put, so I don't have, I feel like it'll be kind of like paving the path for other PAs, but one of us has to start it. We have to kind of push that door down.
Yeah, I think that is the key, and help come to the table with, you know, here's a solution. Here's something that I can help you with. And I think the more they see the value in what you do and what you can bring to the table, the more likely you're going to help your program move forward.
Right.
And I totally understand where you're at, because that's kind of how I felt when I came to Wichita State. I needed to engage with how the other faculty engaged on campus if I in the program was going to be seen as a fully functional, respected unit on campus like everybody else.
Right, right. And do you think there's value in, let's say, mirroring how other, let's say your university has integrated the PA program and that tenure track, and how, like, that I can bring as an example of, these are how established programs are functioning, utilizing PA faculty in these various ways?
Yeah, and one of the things that, I'm glad you just brought that up, because it reminds me, one of the first things that we did when I started there, and Randy may remember this, I don't know, is that we put together a faculty role statement of what it meant to be an assistant professor, an associate professor, and a full professor in PA education in the context of the broader university. Not only the kind of courses that you taught, how many courses you taught, that sort of thing, but what's important in terms of scholarship, and how's that viewed, not just in that department, but, you know, more broadly among peers. So that would be something that you may want to consider, and that could be, we could share that with you. And there's a lot of other programs that have done that over the years as well, to help start the process of, you know, here's our value. This is what we do. This is what's important in our profession. This is the kind of things we research and so on.
That would be very much appreciated. We really like that for sure. Thank you.
So Rick, we're running out of time, but I have one last question. It sort of falls in line with the conversation we've been having. And Michelle asked this, she goes, have you come across a leadership training program for higher education that you have found helpful when moving into upper administrative positions? And I know that there are lots of organizations out there, like the Academy of Academic Leadership, and there's three or four other I can think about, but have you found anything useful for people who want to move above the PA program into provost, vice president roles?
Mm-hmm. Well, the kind of organizations that I've always kind of gravitated to are organizations like the American Public Land Grant University Association, APLU. That is a collection of university leaders from the, you know, associate vice president level, provost president level, public research universities. And so they have all kinds of leadership kinds of trainings for folks. But there's also that same kind of organization for smaller schools too, that provide that kind of activity as well, and private schools. And then DO schools have the same sort of thing. And I know that Randy, that's the origin of your university. So that's where I would look for those kinds of opportunities. You always have to think about, okay, do I want to advance in leadership roles at the university where I'm located currently? Or am I looking to go somewhere else and, you know, move into a different segment of the higher education sector? You need to think about joining those particular groups, or at least following those kind of groups, to understand what the issues are. And then that's where you can make those connections with people who are leaders in those areas, and attend the workshops that they have for those particular organizations.
Excellent. Well, I think we're going to call it a night. I know we're getting close to your bedtime. Yeah. and mine as well. So, but once again, Rick, thank you for your time today, participating in our masterclass, and thanks to all of you for joining us today. For the rest of you, mark on your calendars our next masterclass. It will be on Monday, October 17th at 2022 at 4 p.m. Mountain Standard Time. Our guest will be Stu Richards, PAC, who's a retired medical liaison officer with the Department of State, who will share his experience serving at many of the U.S. embassies around the world, including the last few days in Afghanistan and the last days before the U.S. military left the country. So we're excited about these programs. And once again, Rick, thank you for your time. It's really great to see you again, and I hope to see you down the road.
Well, thank you, Randy. There is one little more question in that chat, and I'll just say the question is, how did you find getting cooperation for PA papers and other professions? I'm assuming among nurses and physicians and other people who are not familiar with PA scholarship. It goes back to what I was saying earlier about developing that role statement and what's important, what's valued in the profession, what your peers value. And there's a lot of work done already in PA education in the journals, looking at what people publish, how much they publish. I think Randy's been involved in some of that work over the years that is out there to be able to make the case of who you are as a profession. And it's a valid profession and should be viewed that way. So, you know, if things are peer reviewed, you know, that's where it really matters at the university levels and particularly research universities. So I didn't mean to inject again there, but.
All good stuff.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you all. Good luck to you. And you have a good evening.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And bye. Thank you all. Have a great night.
Good night.